Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're just learning about this show, please know that it is on the air for you by bringing on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain. Our goal for each show is to bring answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And remember, if you can't listen live, go to our website at answers.network and browse through a variety of heartfelt and enlightening topics. I'm confident that there is something you will find that will bring greater joy to your life. Now, I also have a favor to ask. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. And I can tell you that today's show, we all know somebody who can benefit from this show. Now, because the topic today is from people pleaser to soul pleaser. And it's also the title of our guest's new book. Now, personally, I believe that we're in a time where indoctrination and conditioning are all around us. All you have to do is look at social media, news media, and commercialism. So many influences telling us what to think, who to believe, and what to do. Now, I found this book takes you through steps that helps us to understand why we are here. It helps us shed the layers of conditioning that no longer serve us. Our guest guides us through the process of awakening our true purpose and helps us to understand why it's all right and beneficial to embrace who you are. Author, personal development coach, public speaker, and founder of Soul Pleaser, Tracy Seacombe brings us the culmination of her personal transformation and experience with those she has coached through her professional programs. Now, from her home in Adelaide, Australia, with her husband, three children, and two border collies, Tracy has found a way to serve others without sacrificing her own well-being. She welcomes us to include her on our personal journey of discovery, as I welcome her to Answers Network.
Hi, Alan. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure, and I have enjoyed every bit of reading your book. And I have to also confess, there were many times in which I felt you were talking directly to me.
I love that. That's the whole intention, I think, as an author, is we want to feel like we're having a conversation with the reader.
Yes. So now, as I mentioned, that you're already working with people as a personal coach. At what point did you decide, you know what, I think it's time for me to write a book about what it is that that you were either learning from them, or did you decide to write the book as you started to look more inward and you saw what this was doing for you?
I felt very called because, as you'll learn in the book, when you become a soul pleaser, you're very much guided by your soul rather than overthinking things and coming up with your own ideas. You just feel this intuitive pull. So it felt like a real calling, just like creating the program did. But the main reason that I decided to turn the program into a book is because of the results I was seeing. I knew for myself that the transition from people pleaser to soul pleaser was incredibly powerful, and I saw the flow and effect of me changing to everybody around me. And then when I took people through the program and saw the changes in them, I thought, I need to make this accessible, very, very accessible to anybody, and I'm really glad that I did.
You know, one of the things that I loved was that there were so many influences, you know, that you would not only talk about how things affected you, but how other people had responded. And it's, to me, it was like all these different success stories that are all lumped in one book. So, and that kept me feeling so good about it. But one of my questions is, what was the most surprising thing that you discovered during the process of researching and writing this book you didn't really anticipate?
Probably that there are so many people that are people pleasers. So when I first had the idea, I felt like I received the idea that I'd gone from being a people pleaser to soul pleaser. I thought that I was probably the biggest people pleaser in the world, and perhaps I was a little crazy and nobody else would really understand what I was talking about. So when I started to be really vulnerable and share stories about the things that I used to think and the things I would do as a result of those thoughts, so many people said me too. And I think that's always the case. I think we're all connected and we do experience the same things. And I think that that's part of the healing process, is to be able to hear that you're not alone. Other people are thinking like you and behaving like you and want the same things and want the same changes. And I also had this silly idea that it was only women that were people pleasers. And I think that was because I'd grown up with a mum who was a people pleaser and a dad who wasn't. My dad was very much, you know, confident and, you know, knew who he was. And I was really lucky to be able to have that example in my life, but I very much took after my mother and followed in my mother's footsteps. And so this program I started to deliver just to women, but now I deliver it to men as well, because they've found me and I realize that we're human. And of course, men can be people pleasers as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I'll bet. Yeah. So that was interesting in the sense that, so you're thinking I'm the biggest people pleaser out there, and then you start realizing that there are hundreds of thousands of other people going, no, I'm the biggest people pleaser out there.
That's
and
right.
So on, exactly. And so on and so on. Yeah. And actually, it's interesting. You use the term people pleaser. I've used the term helper bees, you know, for a long time. And for those of us, you know, that I put in that category, how do you believe that we can still continue to help others without sacrificing our own well-being?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So the shift is really important, because it's not going from being a people pleaser to being selfish, as in looking after the conditioned self. It's a soul pleaser. And when we tune into our soul or God or all that is, whatever word resonates, the universe, when we tap into that, that part of us knows what's best for all. And so if we're guided by that and we follow the impulse that we get from being guided by that, then the choices that we make will always be for the highest good for all. Whereas when we're coming from a people pleaser point of view, what we're actually doing is we're giving to get. So I always really prided myself in being such a giver and being selfless. But what I realized is that the reason I was doing it is because I wanted validation. I wanted to feel like I was a good person. And in a way, I was making sure that I was a good girl because I'd get to heaven, you know. So I had this idea that I had to be good. And that's a slippery slope, because we can't get it right all the time, and we can't expect other people to like us and approve of us, you know, just because we are trying to help them. And so when we shift to just being inspired by our true essence, we naturally give, but we understand that if we don't take the time to actually tune in and connect to our soul, which requires us making our feelings a priority, we have nothing to give. And so that's how we end up burnt out and exhausted from overgiving.
You know, and there's a question that's coming in right now, and I think it touches on this particular area. This one reads, as a nurse of 28 years, I find it very natural and get great pleasure from helping people in need. I have done the same in my home for my husband and children. Unfortunately, I feel I have created a role for myself that they expect me to be 24/7 without anyone looking out for my needs. When I ask for help, I'm treated as if I'm being selfish or crazy. How do I change this cycle? And this is Rebecca in San Francisco, California.
Oh, hi, Rebecca. Thank you so much for that question. Well, first of all, my book was inspired not only by my journey, but my mother's journey. And she was also a nurse all through her life, right up until she passed away. She was still nursing in her 70s. So I can very much relate to your story and that natural giver and helper in you. I was a physiotherapist, and I think that, you know, as givers and helpers, we're often drawn to a career where we can give to others, because it really brings us pleasure. So the first of all, what I'd like to say to you is that there is nothing wrong with pleasing people when it brings you pleasure. But what can happen is that we set ourselves up, as you have, as this person that always gives and doesn't look after yourself necessarily, and people then expect that. So when I started to speak my truth, what I had to do was tell the whole story and take full responsibility for it. So I would say to people who were used to relying on me always being there for them, look, I completely take responsibility for you expecting me to always put everybody else first, but I am learning that for me to really, truly be able to help others and give, I need to be able to look after myself first. And so the first thing I started to do when people asked me to do something is say, can you just leave that with me for a while so that I can check in on that and come back to you, to buy myself some time, because I found it so difficult to say no. My default was yes. Yes was out of my mouth before I actually really understood what I was saying yes to. Mm-hmm. And with family, I think there is an adjustment period as they get used to you starting to, you know, prioritize yourself. But if you can reassure them that by you prioritizing yourself, you are going to be even better for them in terms of the way you're feeling, and the more joy that you have and the more energy you have, the better you'll be as a family member anyway.
Yeah. I love that because I think that that is something that a lot of us struggle with. And when you said that, you know, I felt the hair on the back of my neck come up where we blurt out the yes and then go, what did I just agree to?
Yeah, you know, it's just so automated for us to say yes.
Yeah. Now, kind of along those lines, and I have a question that says, so, I mean, how can a person tap into their natural ability to share what's true for them without necessarily offending or giving the appearance to others that they believe them to be either inadequate or broken? You know, where, you know, it's, you know, I learned about something, I learned about this new, you know, health and longevity thing, and so I'm excited about it, and so I want to share it with everybody. I'm going, hey, let me tell you about this greatest thing. And it's, you know, I start going into it and they're like, so do you think I need that? Like, yeah. No, I wasn't, you know, and then you find yourself backpedaling. So what are some ways, because I think that, as you said, we still get a great deal of satisfaction from helping people. And, yeah. And I'm not in any way judging them. I'm just sharing the new exciting thing. So what's a way that we can do that to where we're not making them feel like, you know, again, like they're inadequate or broken? That isn't my goal, and I don't think that it is other people's goal when they're just excited to want to help people.
Yeah, that's so true. I think it's important to, when you start to tune into your soul, you get really good at reading people. You get really good at understanding their energy and where they're at. So I really experienced this when I first started teaching the program from People Pleaser to Soul Pleaser, because I started with women. A lot of women wanted to rescue their husbands and they wanted them to start doing the work. And it's because they love them and it's because they want what's best from them. Mm-hmm. But I said to them, you can't make people drink the Kool-Aid, because that's what it feels like. It's like I found this, you know, fountain of youth, for example, and I want to share it with the world. But you can't start preaching to people when they don't want to hear it and they're not ready for it. And so the best that we can do is be the example for anybody that we love. If we just are the example and we just love what we're doing, if people notice that, they'll ask. And so I always say, be patient, make your own self-development the priority, and lovingly do what you're doing. And if people ask, then share. But be careful to not, you know, sprout it all the time and push it down people's throats, because people are at all different stages of their own personal development journey. Everybody is growing and evolving. And so we just have to be careful to get not too enthusiastic and shout it to the world when they're not ready to hear it.
Well, along those lines of modeling, which is what you're talking about, share a little bit about some of the things, as I know you touch on it in the book, the examples that we're setting for our children. You know, I think it's the same type of thing. You know, what are we modeling for them as far as, and it's interesting because when you mentioned about, you know, your mother being a nurse, and that's where you got this from. You know, you saw, okay, I guess this is what the woman does, and so yeah. You're doing it. So what are some things we can do to raise our children as happy and healthy as possible, and yet not necessarily making them people pleasers?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question. So first of all, people pleasing not only comes from modeling a people pleaser, but it also starts with us trying to please our parents. So as parents, I think it's very important for you to check in and notice whether your children's emotions are dependent on your emotions. And I certainly was able to notice that. I thought, I came across as this very kind, generous person. You really had to push me to get angry because I'd grown up being a good girl. And so anger was something that I suppressed. So as a mother, I would be nice as pie, nice as pie, nice as pie. And then like a volcano, I would explode if you pushed me too far. And the children would really recoil from that naturally because they didn't want to upset mum. And so what I teach my clients to do is, if your child has pushed you to the limits and you end up, you know, getting upset, you are only human. And the best thing you can do to your child in that moment is come to them once you've recognized it and let them know, I was angry and that anger had nothing to do with you. Because that's the key, is for the child not to take on that responsibility. I feel responsible for whether my mum or my dad is happy or not. And that's why they end up as people pleasers, is they tread on eggshells around people, wanting everyone to be happy all the time, which is impossible. We're all meant to feel the whole gamut of emotions. There's no emotion that's right or wrong. And so that's the first thing. Then the next thing is to start to tune into your soul and recognize that you are uniquely you, and embrace being you, and encourage your children to do the same. As parents, we think we sometimes know what's best for our kids, and we may not realize we're trying to steer them down a certain path that we think is good for them. Let go of them, that. Let them find out what they are here to do and be, and just encourage them to be exactly who they are.
Yeah. And, you know, I like that. And when you mentioned the thing about, you know, going to them and talking to them, the vision that I thought was, or that I thought about was the coming home and them not realizing that there were 9 other things between work and the drive home that you kept throwing in the back of this little pack on our shoulder. We kept throwing it there. And then the kids do something and run by and break something and you explode. They need to understand that one thing that they did isn't what caused this explosion, you know, and if you can keep from doing the explosion, great. But at least if you do it, for them to explain that, you know, I had a really bad day and I had these other 9 things and stuff, is communication.
Absolutely. And the other thing that you're showing them is it's okay to express your emotions, because to bring up a people pleaser, you're also inadvertently teaching them you're not allowed to feel like this or that. You know, if you get angry, please don't show it to me. I don't like it when you're angry. Then you're again teaching them that that's not okay. So the fact that you have exploded or you've felt your emotion and you've expressed it and then you've communicated about it, you're showing them, I'm human. I can feel an emotion. It's not your fault. I'm responsible for how I feel. I'm working on being able to express that in better ways rather than, you know, I'm going to take a few deep breaths and take a walk next time rather than, you know, taking it out on you. But if we can not think that we are superior in some way because we're the parent and we're older, but we are both souls and communicate at that soul level with our children, it just is a beautiful relationship that you can build at a very early stage. And you can do this with any age of your children. They might be grown up and have left home, and you can still start to change the way that you parent.
I know in the book you give lots of examples. One of the things that I really like to bring out in this show is examples and, you know, and things to where it shows an arc, you know, to where here was the problem and here is the solution and here's the happy ending, you know, that type of thing. So share a few of, or at least a couple of the examples that you give in the book, because I think there's lots of people out there that'll go, oh, wait, that's me.
Yeah. Well, I talk about the way that people pleasing affects all the different areas of our lives. And one of them is our health. And I share a story about one of the ladies that I worked with, and she was really struggling with her health, her fitness and her weight. And, and she found that those things had got worse as her family grew and the demands grew of looking after her children, as well as running her business and all of those things. And one of the questions that I asked in the program was, who do you blame for a circumstance that you don't like at the moment? And she was stopped in her tracks and she thought, I blame my family. I'm actually blaming my family for my poor health. And when she realized that she was responsible for the choices that she was making, she then started to change things and put more time into preparing healthy meals for herself. She started exercising again. And over the period of time that she was in the program, she lost 18 kilograms as a result of making these shifts. And it was beneficial for her family as well. You know, they modeled her change in her behaviors, but it was just letting go of not thinking, I have to put myself last. You know, my health doesn't matter. I have to get them to these appointments and all of those sorts of things. So that was one example from a health point of view.
Well, and so let's stick with that one for a moment. Do you also know, or did she share, how did the family change or rally around her when she started making those changes and they saw that she was happier, that she was healthier, that she was losing weight, she was preparing better meals, all of these positive things, but they might not have also been being catered to as much. Does she talk about how that part of it changed as well?
Yeah, she said that it was a magnificent change, not only for her, but for the relationships between her and every member of her family, and that they took on the healthy, you know, sort of habits as well, but they were her biggest cheerleader, you know, as they watched her health improve. Obviously, you know, it improves your joy and your vitality and your energy and how much she could play with the children. So everybody benefited. And so I think that every time somebody makes themselves a priority, which just means that you do it first, it doesn't mean that you neglect anybody else. It means when I wake up in the morning, I'm going to check in and see how I'm feeling, think better thoughts, do what is the best thing I can for me so that I feel great. And so you still do all the helping and all the support, but you're coming from this energized place where you're tuned into your soul and you're feeling that love, you know, that true essence. So, yeah, there was a really positive flow and effect to the whole family. And they had never resented her in any way for not, you know, for putting herself first. They actually were really glad. And that's always the result. We're so fearful of the response we're going to get, but it's always a positive response when we start to prioritize ourselves.
I love that. And we have a comment that is coming in from someone else that I think loves it as well. It says, I really love your reference to becoming a soul pleaser. I turned 65 last week, and at my party, my daughter asked me a question. If I could go back in time and change anything, what would that be? I replied that I would have not chased career so obsessively, but instead I would have spent more time with her. Wow. Learning, exploring, and traveling together. I can't change my past, but I can inspire her to do things differently with her own daughter. Thank you for this sweet and important message. And that's from Naomi in Washington.
Oh, you're welcome, Naomi. That's a beautiful message. And do you know, it's never too late. I made this shift when my children were teenagers. And the change is incredible, and it can be with adults. And I think, what is it for? You know, I've really changed my whole career because I think my mum went through all of that, and so did my grandmother. What can I do to help? Well, they sacrificed themselves so that I could do things differently and their grandchildren could do things differently. So I think it's beautiful that you can see that you can help that change.
All right. We're speaking with Tracy Seacombe, and we're talking about her book, From People Pleaser to Soul Pleaser. We're going to take a break. So for everybody out there, shoot a message out to the people pleaser that you know and tell them you've got something that they should listen to the second half of. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We're talking about people-pleasing and changing it into soul-pleasing. With us is Tracy Seacomb. She is the author. And Tracy, one of the things that you touch on in the book, and I'd love for you to share with our viewers and listeners, is for that person that's been a people-pleaser, helper bee, however we want to put it, all of their life, and they find themselves not really knowing what they want. What do they really love to do? So share a little bit about how they can determine what it is that they love, what it is that they want to do, and then find the confidence to pursue it.
Oh, such a great question. So it's all inside of us. And the reason that you often don't know what you want is because you've been a helper bee or people pleaser. So you've been so distracted looking after everybody else's needs and tuning into what they want and helping them get what they want. And so I wouldn't have any regrets about that. So the first thing is be kind to yourself and say, that was then, this is now, it's time for me. And so have the confidence that what you love is inside of you and it will reveal itself. I think sometimes people come to me, I just don't know. I don't know what I want. And discovering this is exciting and you don't need to put any pressure on yourself. I think just the intention of finding what you want is the first step. And just because you want it, you're going to attract it to you. But you need to create time to allow yourself to explore it. When we're really stuck in our heads and we're overthinking, worrying about what people think, rehashing a conversation from the past, wondering if we offended someone, all of that head work keeps us out of our heart. And when we're in our heart, that's how we connect to our soul. And that's how we receive the little hint or the little impulse to go and try something. Or we remember, oh, that's right, I used to love that when I was young. That comes to us when we're in a peaceful state, which could be through meditation or just taking a stroll in nature, you know, just quietening down and slowing down and just allowing yourself some stillness. And that really allows us to notice and receive those ideas. But also just thinking, when's the last time you really felt lit up? And when I did this for myself, I realized that it was when somebody had a mindset issue and they were talking to me and I would say something and you would see the shift in their eyes. You would see that they get it. And I was like, oh, and that's what really led me to doing this is because I realized that's what really lights me up. So that will be a natural progression if you have the intention of finding what you love.
You know, I've had some thoughts of relationships and stuff over the years and of the different types of people. And you can have a people pleaser. You can have someone who is very, very adept at taking, at receiving and not necessarily at giving. And I've thought that maybe the best combination that you can get is if you can get two people pleasers in the sense that you are both so interested in helping each other that you don't ever get to that point to where you feel like I'm being taken advantage of because they're doing the same thing to you as you're doing to them. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that if we're both people pleasers, then we're both giving to get and we're both expecting something in return. So that's what I mean by people pleaser. I think that our true essence loves helping other people, but I think a people pleaser needs to, because we need that validation back. And so if we have two soul pleasers come together, then we have two people who we love who we are, we know who we are, we love who we are, and we're unapologetically ourselves, and we allow the other person equally to be themselves. And when we're being our true self, we are naturally giving. So it's not an effort. It's not to get any sort of recognition or even appreciation back. We don't expect appreciation. I remember one of my clients, they are a couple, and they were saying, we did this, this, and this for this other couple and not even a thank you. And they were furious. And I said, as you start to really tune into your soul, you will do it purely because you love doing it, and you will not expect anything back in return. And when if you can come together like that, then there's no neediness. There's no codependence in the relationship. Right. You allow the other person to have different interests to you. You don't need to be together all the time. You can go off and do different things, and then you can come together and share those things. And you love each other. My definition of love is freedom and acceptance. When we truly love someone, we accept them fully, and we're not trying to change them. We're not wanting them to be different. And I think that can really create a powerful relationship.
So what I hear you saying then is that the ideal couple are two soul pleasers that are together.
Yeah. And if you are starting down the soul pleaser journey and your partner isn't, I always say to people, take yourself back to when you first met, because we can be guided by our souls when we meet our partners, and we may have lost that sense along the way since then, and we've started to run into relationship troubles. I can tell very quickly when people tell me their story of how they met, whether their souls brought them together in the first place. And I'm like, don't worry, trust that. You go on your soul pleaser journey. Don't have impatience with your partner coming with you. They will. They will come with you. It only takes one of you to make the decision to start this soul pleaser journey.
That's great. And while we're kind of focusing on the loving ourselves, and I know you bring it up in the book, share with us some examples of loving ourselves no matter what.
Yeah, this is the tricky thing is, as a people pleaser, we're often a perfectionist, and people pleasing is really a self-worth issue, because we want someone else to tell us we're okay. And when we can go within and feel unconditional love for ourselves, it means that even if we make a mistake, we still love ourselves. Even if we say something and afterwards we think, oh, that was a bit awkward, that was a bit stupid, we can still love ourselves. And I still had to do this even after I'd started coaching this. I had to write a little post-it note saying, I love myself no matter what, because it's easy to love yourself when things are going well. It's easy to feel good about yourself when you know in your mind you're doing a good job. But we can be our own worst critic. And I used to focus on all my mistakes much more than I would on the things that went well. And it's great for us to improve, but the way for us to improve is to fully accept where we are right now. And it's knowing that our soul or God or the universe loves us no matter what and doesn't have conditions on the love for us. And it's loving ourselves in that same way that allows us to be able to love other people without conditions. We love the way we love ourselves. So that's a good incentive to do it.
Yes. Now, looking at on a broader scale, what are some of the things that you've seen in society, in our culture, in the changes over the last maybe 10 or 20 years? What are some of the things that you think have made this more difficult or made the problem more difficult? And also, what are some of the things you've seen that shows that there's actually a beautiful way to get through all of this and become even better from it?
Yeah. So one of the things I think that has put more pressure on people to please others is social media. So a lot of young people and people my age as well are looking at people showing the best part of their lives and comparing. And that's a big symptom of people pleasing, is for us to compare ourselves to somebody else and think they're doing better than us, you know, they're prettier than us or fitter than us or healthier than us or have more money than us, and that comparison. And one of the most important concepts that I talk about in the book is that when you start to tune into your soul and when you just start to discover you and understand who you are, you realize that we are all one. And when we can connect at the human level and understand that no matter how different somebody may look or what their culture may be like or where they come from, you know, with sexuality or anything like that, we are all one. We're all part of the same whole. And when we can tune into that and understand that, and perhaps it's because I'm in the industry, I'm seeing so many people wake up to this. I'm surrounded by people becoming aware of this and embracing this. If we can accept each other, then we allow everybody else to be themselves and we allow ourselves to be ourselves. And that is the shift that I am seeing. So we can focus on war, we can focus on all of the things that are going wrong, we can focus on, you know, the fences going up and stopping immigration and, you know, building barriers to protect ourselves, or we can focus on the opposite of that, where we see somebody from a different race with somebody else embracing their differences. And I think for us to have a peaceful global community, that is the secret, is to love ourselves and love each other, accept ourselves and accept each other. And we don't have to be best friends with people that we don't get. You know, we don't have to. That's not what acceptance is. We can focus on our own lives and just let people be rather than being so critical of each other.
Well, from your lips. I love the message. I hope everybody is really taking the message in, because it is very, very important for the growth of our planet and for the people on it. I couldn't agree more. And we've got another question that's coming in, and let me see. The need to seek approval from others in order to feel good about oneself seems to be the norm now, not the exception. In our society, I believe the old saying about keeping up with the Joneses is as relevant today as it ever was. As a mother of one boy and two girls, I truly want my kids to grow up with a better set of values and aspirations. I am looking forward to this show. So this one came in actually earlier, and learning how your book may give me more insight in this topic. I think it's very, very important. And this is from Jerry in J-E-R-I. So I'm a female spelling in California.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, and I think that, you know, recognizing that, and with children just being so encouraging of their differences. Our son has never been sporty and is into musical theatre. And as soon as he found that passion, we just completely embraced it. And, you know, we just allow him to go down that path. That's his thing. That's what lights him up. And there are, you know, the majority of the boys in the school are sporty and do different things, and we've just completely really encouraged him to be himself and do what he loves. And I think it's really important as parents for us to model that, do that ourselves as much as we can, as well as encouraging our children to do it.
And actually, that reminds me of something that John Maxwell said when I was at one of his conferences. And I thought it was great. He said one of the biggest problems with the public school system is the belief that whatever it is that the child is not good at, that you have to then spend 70 or 80% of the time forcing them to do what it is that they're not good at to somehow make them mediocre. And he said it's just the opposite. He said whatever it is that they're not good at, don't push that. Find out what it is that they are good at and push that to greatness. And so when he tells the story, and obviously I agree with him and I love that concept. And he said, for me personally, it was math. He goes, I was terrible at it. And so they decided that 70 or 80% of the time I had to only do math. And he said, eventually, when he finally graduated high school and went off to college, and they said, okay, well, it looks like you're pretty weak in math, so we're going to really try to set you up with math. And he said, no. He said, I'm really good in a lot of other things, and I plan on making so much money, I'm going to hire people to count my money.
Exactly. Exactly. In the book In Be You, I talk about one of the aspects is be uniquely you, embrace your uniqueness. I don't try to be good at the things that I'm not good at. When my husband was away in Germany recently, my son's car broke down, he would have fixed it. I called the RAA. They came and fixed it. You know, I didn't try to learn how to fix the car. That's not my strength. You know, I think it's so important for us to just embrace what we love, what we enjoy, and what we're good at, what comes easy to us.
All right. Well, I just glanced over the clock. We have about 6 minutes, but I would love for you to share a few of your favorite stories. It can be the ones in the book that I read, or if you have some others that are favorites of clients that you've dealt with that have, again, overcome incredible situations to where, you know, they were depressed because of how, you know, how much they were so focused on everybody else and how they came through it and are now thriving.
Yeah. I would love to share a story about a lady called Leanne. So when I met her, she was the principal of a rural school. And so everybody in the community knew her, and she felt a lot of pressure to keep everybody in the community happy. So she was very anxious. She wasn't sleeping at all. She was doing a wonderful job as a principal, but she didn't know that. She didn't know that until she started to become a soul pleaser and could see that she was doing a wonderful job. And so she was very, very stressed when I met her and very miserable. And she told the story that when she was growing up, she, at a very young age, used to run around, her first memories of herself, punching her stomach, saying, I'm fat, I'm fat, I'm fat, when she was about six. So she developed a body image issue really young. She said her mum always talked about being overweight and needing to lose weight. And so she developed that. And so she ended up with an eating disorder sort of in her 20s. She always wanted to be a teacher. From when she was 3 years old, she remembered pretending to be a teacher, and she always wanted to be a teacher. But her parents thought that it would be better for her to be a nurse. And so they sent her off to be a nurse, and she became a nurse, and she hated it. And eventually she went off and went to teachers' college and became a teacher. And she remembered, once she'd started to tune into her soul, that when she was a teacher, the children told her that they could see the light around her. So she was so lit up as a teacher doing what she loved that she was her aura to the children who could still read energy could see it. And so she also always wanted to be an entrepreneur and run her own business. So as a result of doing the Soul Pleaser program and learning everything she learnt, she saw in the classroom all of these mini people pleasers just growing up, having the same issues that she'd had, being guided by other people rather than what they wanted. And she started a business called Calm Kids, and she is now teaching the principles of Soul Pleaser to primary school age children and living her best life. She is just loving what she's doing and having this incredible flow-on effect to children and their families as a result.
Absolutely. And I love that. And she's making a positive difference with the kids at such an early age, that those are seeds that are going to grow and make great changes. I love that. Now, something else that I picked up on when you were saying that was that part of the program is also then just starting to recognize, because what you said about her was that she was already doing a good job and people knew that, but for some reason she didn't recognize those things for whatever reason. So tell us a little bit about the program and how that shift is made.
Yeah, so in the first step of the six steps to being who you're meant to be, it's wake up. And so I go through all of the signs and symptoms of people pleasing. And this awareness really brings to light how our perception actually creates our idea of reality. So her reality was, at night when she was lying in bed making things up, that people perhaps didn't think she was a good principal. So it was all made up in her own mind, but it really linked with her history when she thought she was fat and she wasn't fat. So, you know, having body dysmorphia is looking in the mirror and not seeing what's real, because our mind can actually create our image of ourselves. And so one of the most incredible changes that I see when people go through the program or even read the book, I'm getting wonderful feedback from the book as well, is that they look at their current situation exactly as it is without anything changing through a new lens, and they see it differently. And this is looking through your soul's eyes, because your soul sees the beauty in the world, sees the beauty in your world, in your life, no matter how challenging it might feel to you right now. So as you make this shift and as you tune into your soul and you become more relaxed and calm, you start to see things through your soul's eyes and you see beautiful things.
Now, it seems to me that this is something that would be incredibly beneficial on so many levels. I mean, I can see there are many couples, you know, that I've known over the years that, you know, I felt like they just didn't see eye to eye. You know, they, for whatever reason, were seemed distant at times. And it seems like this is something that could rejuvenate marriages. I mean, it can bring families together. It could probably help offices this function a little better business-wise too.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the relationship side of it is incredible, because our relationships with anybody are always a mirror of our relationship with ourselves. So when you change the relationship with yourself, you will watch all of the relationships you have change. And some of them you might grow apart. You know, people that are not necessarily important to you anymore, you might find that they are just not ready for the new you. But that will feel easy. It won't be difficult. You won't need to force it in any way. You'll just drift apart. But in those family nucleus relationships, those important ones, I have seen people that have not spoken to each other for years, you know, extended families reconcile because one person made the shift to soul pleaser. And that's the key message that I'd like you to know, that you don't have to drag them in and make them do the work. It only takes one person to be able to heal a relationship.
I love that. And I'm smiling because of a question I brought up earlier about those of us that want to help, how we get a piece of information to people without hurting their feelings and stuff. And so the thought just came to my mind is that, you know, I want to tell the listeners, the viewers and stuff, send this podcast to all the people pleasers that you know. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Then they're going to contact you and go, what do you think? I'm a people pleaser? That I need that? So it's this catch-22 of, okay, how do we get the information to them and at the same time not hurt their feelings?
Well, I think that you just offer it, but you're not attached to what they do with it. If they never listen to it, it's okay. So you offer it. Yeah. And I know a lot of my clients and friends have given my book to people, and they know because of the work they've done with me that they give it without any expectation whether they read it or not.
Yeah. Well, Tracy, this has just been wonderful. Again, for everybody out there, I've enjoyed the book. Is there a best place for people to get the book? And what is the best as far as to contact you online, especially to get involved in the program itself?
Great. So my website is my name, tracyseacombe.com, and the book is available on Amazon.
All right. And so for those out there, if you're driving and you're not going to be able to write that down or probably even spell it correctly, I'm going to go over it once, but you can go to our site, theanswers.network, and we will make sure that it's on there as well. But again, that's www.tracy, T-R-A-C-Y. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then secombe.com. And for, I think, those of us here in the United States, you want to add a .au, I think, as well.
It'll work both ways. Yeah.
Yes.
It'll work both ways.
Okay, great. So again, Tracy, thank you so much. And not just for coming on the show, but for writing a book that I think is making an incredibly positive difference in a lot of people's lives. And that's what we want you to keep doing. And that's what we appreciate.
Thank you so much, Alan. Thank you for the wonderful chat. I really appreciate it.
And it's my pleasure as well. And for everybody out there, that if you want to be with us next week, we're going to be joined by Gail Lynn, and she's going to discuss her new book, Unlocking the Ancient Secrets of Healing. It's restoring the body's balance using sound, light, and color. And if you've never been to something like that, I've been where they've done a sound bath and they use different lights. It really is therapeutic. And I went in a little skeptical. So please plan on being with us and check it out. And visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network. Or the simplest thing is just subscribe to the show. You can do it through Apple Podcasts, through iHeartRadio, through Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube. And if you want to do it to where it's all video, subscribe through YouTube and you get to see us as well as hear us. So we're also on Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more popular podcast platforms. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review on whatever platform you're on. I want you to know that it helps us reach more people and we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.